Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Great Old Ones Gaming Podcast, the show centered around games about the weird and terrific. I'm your host, Nate, and in today's episode, we're finally returning back to the world of the Delta Green role-playing game for another Operation review. This time, we'll be taking a look at Music from a Darkened Room. Music from a Darkened Room sees the agents called in for Operation Iago, where the agents are tasked with determining the cause of death of one FBI special agent and Delta Green veteran, Arthur Donnelly. But before we trek any further, I must warn any potential agents in the audience that the rest of this episode is for handler ears only. Any agents looking to experience this operation for themselves should sever their comms now or suffer the consequences. You have been warned. All right, handlers. Now that the agents have dismissed themselves, let's get into the operation briefing. Operation Iago is assumed to take place in Meadowbrook, New Jersey in late 2017, but handlers can adjust the date and location to suit their needs. Whether the agents are members of the program or the outlaws also bears no significance in the operation. Their assignment comes from their usual Delta Green contact or case officer. The team's contact has been given little in the way of information to relay, but the agents' goals are as follows. 1. The agents are to determine Donnelly's cause of death. And 2. The agents are to focus their attention on the house at 1206 Spooner Avenue and determine whether the property will continue to pose a public threat. The agents' contact can fill them in on what Delta Green knows about Donnelly's death. Donnelly went to the house 2 weeks ago without informing his Delta Green contact or following protocol, and nobody is exactly sure why. Donnelly's ex-wife called the Trenton FBI office and reported him missing. Two agents from the office checked his apartment the following day and discovered he had left his cell phone behind. The day after that, the agents worked with the phone provider to track his phone's recent movements and found a number of unexplained visits to 1206 Spooner Avenue. The next day, the two agents went to the house and found Donnelly's body in the blood-drenched master bedroom, his throat slashed. The FBI agents notified local law enforcement. Police Chief Michael Buffington then called in County Coroner Elmer Perkin. Perkin ruled the death a suicide. The agent's contact will say that Delta Green agents in the FBI worked hard to ensure the official investigation of Donnelly's death ended there. Donnelly already had a reputation among people who knew him as depressive, obsessive, and often overwhelmed by stress. Based on web search history and recent trips to the house, Donnelly had become focused on the property. The tragedy was reported in the local paper and made the rounds on the internet for a day, but things have begun to calm down. Their contact states that if they're careful, they can keep it that way. The FBI and local police are happy to sweep the whole thing under the rug, and the neighbors don't want the house's history to affect their property value. The agent's point of contact will then provide them with an old cell phone, pre-programmed with the numbers and addresses of two nearby specialists that can aid the agents in their research. The first is Elizabeth Tucker, an antiques dealer living in Meadowbrook. Tucker is a young, attractive woman with a booming online business that hunts down lost family heirlooms and stolen artifacts. She became involved with Delta Green 3 years before the start of the operation when she tracked down a stolen amulet and witnessed some oddities involving its destruction. Tucker believes Delta Green is a legal, albeit secret, part of the government. Tucker can prove herself to be an invaluable resource for the agent's investigation into the house. But more on that later. The second contact, Yamil Yarrow, is a parapsychologist who works at Fulton College a couple towns over. He became involved with Delta Green 6 years prior when he managed to uncover some useful information to the conspiracy during an investigation of a strange occult force killing people in an old hotel. Like Tucker, Yarrow believes Delta Green's legal legitimacy. Yarrow believes he is an expert in the occult, but in reality, he's nothing more than an amateur. He knows nothing of the unnatural. His purpose in the operation is to direct the agents into danger. He encourages the agents to go inside the house at night because the spirits more easily communicate at night, or to go in alone as the spirits are better with one-on-one communication. The module states that the agent's contact will instruct them to inspect a green box in town while they're there. Once the two tasks they've been assigned are dealt with, they are to report to their contact and await further instruction. So here are my tips for dealing with this initial meeting. 1. Definitely don't dwell on meeting their contact for too long. It's not intended to be an interview. Their point of contact doesn't have much more information than what's already been laid out. 2. I'd recommend waiting to tell the agents about the green box until after they've had a chance to at least go into the house, for a few reasons. 1. It keeps the players focused on the house, which is the main focal point of the operation. 2. It gives the agents a chance to start piecing out what happened to Donnelly on their own. And 3. If they get stuck, their contact can instruct them to go visit the green box, which helps to push the narrative along. And lastly, if you plan to run this in a single session, I'd almost recommend cutting Yarrow out entirely, unless your players are the type to not go into the house at all. So you might at this point be thinking that this seems like a pretty mundane investigation, and to some extent it kind of is, but the house itself is where things get weird. Spooner Avenue is a quiet street, and 1206 Spooner Avenue is a small house whose appearance is wholly unremarkable, but has garnered a bit of a reputation in Meadowbrook. After a murder-suicide that took place in the house about 50-some years ago, 16 more people have since died in the house. All but one of those deaths was uncanny. It's a water cooler topic across Meadowbrook. Somehow, the house has been continuously sold throughout the years, despite new tenants never lasting more than a month. People in Meadowbrook believe that the house has a draw to it, and those who live near the house do their best to avoid the property. The house was built in 1907 by Michael Wheeler, who brought his wife Isabel to die there. Isabel was infected by an unknown ailment which robbed her of use of her legs and racked her body with spasms and convulsions. Despite her condition, she outlived Michael by decades. Michael was struck in the head and killed by a piece of marble at a work site in 1910. In 1926, Isabel hired a seamstress, an Italian woman named Adele Di Vitello, I think that's how you pronounce it, apologies for the butchery, to re-sew her drapes. Yeesh, that's a euphemism. But soon after, the two became inseparable, and Adele eventually moved into the house. In reality, Adele is a witch who signed her life away to one of the many masks of Nyarlathotep. In the summer of that year, Isabel was seemingly cured of all of her ailments. In reality, Di Vitello used her dark magic to bind Isabel's suffering to each mirror in the house. Locals began to talk, and it became clear that strange things were going on. Animals would regularly turn up dead, and strange men began gathering at the house. In 1940, Adele consecrated the property to Nyarlathotep and built a room for her nightly rituals, which culminated in the summer of 1955, when Adele's patron appeared and opened his black book to Isabel Wheeler. Isabel refused to sign her name into the book, and over the course of the following year, Adele left and Isabel wasted away in the house under the care of a private nurse. Since he was a kid, Donnelly had always had an interest in the house. During his time as a Delta Green agent, he posed as a would-be buyer to investigate the house, sending word to Delta Green. Sometime later, the house was purchased by Yamila Yasari. Donnelly had attempted to dissuade Yasari from purchasing the house, but his warning fell on deaf ears. Not too long after, she died in the house, her throat seemingly slashed by a razor. Donnelly's obsession with the house eventually consumed him, and he, too, became another victim of the house on 1206 Spooner Avenue. The module provides agents plenty of opportunity to do some proper gumshoeing if they desire. The module details what the agents can learn from trudging up paperwork at the county offices, interviewing neighbors, local police, and the coroner, Elmer Perkin, and more about the house's history and news archives. If you're looking to run this over the course of many sessions, these sections are an invaluable resource you can draw upon during your prep time. Whether you plan to run this as a one-shot or over the course of multiple sessions, there are a few key things the agents must learn or uncover if they're to stand a chance at overcoming the horrors of the house on Spooner Avenue. The agents have two possible means for dispatching the unnatural threat from 1206 Spooner Avenue, the first of which is an elder sign. A bit obvious, but it's not mentioned anywhere in the house or its history. The module admits that unless the agents have prior knowledge of the elder sign, this is an unlikely solution. I understand its inclusion as a potential means for deconsecrating the house, but as written, it sort of feels unearned. Handlers wishing to include the elder sign as an option for the agents may want to add clues into the investigation that allude to a means for creating such an artifact. I think the green box is a natural fit for such information. As written, however, unless your group has had prior exposure to the elder sign, Isabel's diary is going to be the agent's best option. The bulk of the agent's efforts really should be directed at finding Isabel's diary, whether directly or indirectly. The diary has been tucked away in an old end table unbeknownst to its current owner, Emily Harrison, who's a Meadowbrook local. The agent's contact, Elizabeth Tucker, can point them in Emily's direction, or the agents can discover this through the right skill rolls. Secreted with the diary is a small bronze knife and bowl needed to carry out the ritual Convolci l'uomo nero. I'm sure I'm butchering that, I apologize. This elaborate ritual calls forth the Dark Man, or Nyarlathotep. First, 200 hit points worth of animals need to be sacrificed over the course of many years on the nights of the new moon. And even then, the presence of the Dark Man is not a guarantee. A definite method to summon the Dark Man is to conduct a human sacrifice to deconsecrate the ground and dismiss the Dark Man forever. The module stresses that this decision should weigh heavy on the agents' minds, and rightfully so. Mechanically, the ritual is no slouch either. If the agents are willing and able to pay the price, they can rid the property of Nyarlathotep's influence and gain some sanity as a consultation. Apart from Isabel's journal hidden away in the end table, there are two other pieces of furniture still tied to the house. The first of which is an old upright piano that's at a nearby local shop. The piano itself appears to be pretty unremarkable, but when music can be heard playing in the 1206 Spooner Avenue house, agents are able to glimpse at Isabel's incorporeal form playing the piano. If the agents think to destroy the piano, the music in the 1206 Spooner Avenue house will cease. The other antique of note is Isabel's armoire that's located in Columbia City. Tucker can help them locate the piece in a matter of a few days, but if the agents are searching on their own, it's going to take them months to find it. Like the piano, the armoire is physically unremarkable. Any agent with a POW score of 15 or higher that decides to enter the armoire and shut the door will witness the ritual mentioned earlier as if it were occurring in the room outside. If they stay long enough, they can hear the Dark Man's voice followed by a blood-curdling scream, after which the vision ends. The armoire can be a neat way to show the agents some of the house's history, if it wasn't so far out of the way or time-consuming to locate. I like the connection the artifacts have to Isabel, and by extension, the story at large. The spirit of Isabel Wheeler still resides in the house after all these years, and it is her spirit that is behind all the horrific events that have been taking place over the decades. The house itself, much like all of the artifacts mentioned earlier, is nothing out of the ordinary, if a bit dated looking. The agents with the relevant skills can tell the house has been extensively modified since its original construction, which is not that uncommon for older buildings. A thorough investigation of the interior reveals that the house was renovated sometime in the 70s. A fire occurred in the bedrooms in the back half of the house, and great effort was made to repairing it. The interior of the house is still decorated with Yamila Yasari's things, which her family has yet to collect. The master bedroom is covered in bloodstains. A single stain seemingly draws a line from one of the walls across the ceiling and to the point on the floor where Donnelly's body still lay. The house is fueled by the anger and hatred of the people that live in it. The house draws strength from the fear of its visitors. Isabel Wheeler was the first to be trapped behind the reflections, and since then has collected souls to join her in the dark world. A few of those who have perished in the house, including Donnelly, now find their spirits caught in a terrible loop of reliving their past moments over and over again, or being controlled by Isabel. Wheeler's sole motivation is for the pain of others to distract her from her own torment. She will feed on the inhabitants of the house unless stopped. The house wants nothing more than to gain willpower points. In the module's own words, it's a battery for misery, death, and sorrow, bent on affecting those who enter it to replenish itself. The house will devise a menagerie of wicked deeds to get the agents to enter in the house alone. Agents with a high enough POW score will have an uncomfortable feeling of being watched anytime they're in the house. Once the agents enter the house, it'll go out of its way to get them to return, again, preferably alone. It'll make phone calls, send text messages, emails, all to get their attention. The house is also capable of creating manifestations that warp reality itself. In short, the house is devious. The module provides the house with the ability to possess people should it need to. Rightfully so, the module recommends that these types of effects should be used sparingly. Mechanically, the house has a pool of willpower points that it can spend to attempt to influence its potential victims. The harsher the effect, the more points the house must spend. The manifestations work a bit differently. Each room has three entries corresponding to willpower thresholds. A manifestation may occur according to that agent's current willpower. Again, the module stresses to pace these out, saving the best for last. A lot of the manifestations are actually events that occurred in the house, and should the handler need to, you could use these types of manifestations to sprinkle in clues for the agents. Handlers, let the players in and out of the house. The spirit of Isabel Wheeler likes to torment its subject over the course of many years, and will really only hasten this if necessary. I think on a similar note, make what the agents discover feel relevant. Maybe you could show some images of the furniture that they need to look out for. In either case, don't be afraid to use the house's manifestations to guide the agent's investigation. And lastly, try your best to get at least one of your agents alone in the house. I think failing that, having an NPC like Yarrow or Tucker or Perkin, which we'll discuss in a moment, they could easily fall prey to the house as well. A particularly devious handler might even throw in some of the agent's bonds as well. Just some food for thought. Elmer Perkin is the county coroner who has handled all the deaths on Spooner Avenue since 1994. Perkin is a talkative sort, and is known for getting drunk at the local inn and spilling all the details on local deaths. If the agents approach him with some drinks, he may spill the guts to them. Pun intended. Becoming a good source of information for the agents to confirm or arise some of their suspicions. Perkin calls Asari's and Donnelly's deaths damn strange, stating that the cuts on their throats were identical. The blood spray patterns were nearly identical as well. Perkin suspected that Donnelly obsessively tried to recreate Asari's death. In both cases, it seems like the mirror was being blocked by something in the shape of a person. Perkin admits that in neither case did the detectives find a suicide weapon, but neither did they find any evidence of anyone else present in the house. With no conclusive evidence towards homicide, Perkin ruled the deaths as a suicide and moved on. If the agents reach Perkin through official means, such as the police or using their cover as FBI agents, Perkin will be less forthcoming, and may even require the assistance of the chief of police, Michael Buffington, to sequester documents and information from him. Whether you tell the agents up front, or you, as I suggested, wait to tell them at some point during their investigation, there's a green box in a nearby facility not too far from the house on Spooner Avenue. The unit that contains the green box has slipped through the cracks of Delta Green, and the fee has gone unpaid for nearly three quarters of a year. The owner, Brian Miglia, aims to collect. Miglia suspects that the shed is worth a lot of money. If the agents go around waving badges at Miglia, he will largely stand out of the way. if the agents approach him as civilians, Miglia will try to do what he can to distract the agents. If things get really bad, he'll even go so far as to send his three workers to break into the unit one night. Hopefully that doesn't happen. But you never know. The green box contains some mundane items. Shovels, a camera, stuff like that. But there are some important things that the agents can uncover. The first of which, and probably strangest of all, is a coffin that contains the remains of one Anton Touré, a young boy who drowned in the house on Spooner Avenue. Agents that can actually get into the green box will also find Donnelly's notes next to a nearly minted set of keys for the house. Donnelly's notes paint a picture of his descent into madness. There's also some useful clues should the agents need them as well. The green box, I think, serves best as a midpoint in the operation after the agents have had the chance to enter the house and experience it for themselves. Yeah, you remember when I mentioned earlier that the agent's point of contact will provide them with further instruction? I like to save the green box for that moment. It makes sense, too, given that Delta Green itself has let this particular green box fall to the wayside. Handlers, I would resist the urge to plant seeds in here for future operations. Remember that the investigation is supposed to be focused on the house. I think throwing more things at your players is only going to serve to divert the investigation. I think another tip that I have for handlers running this in general is to not dwell on each various investigative encounter on its own for too long. The peripheral details are there to serve as lows contrasting with the highs that the agents experience during their visits to the house. I think if you're planning this for a single session, I'd recommend moving or cutting out some of the background information to keep the pace of the game going. And I think on a similar note too, you could probably cut the complications with Miglia just to get the plot moving along. The general idea with this scenario is that the agents are supposed to go in the house, experience some things, and do some follow-up research. It's really definitely what I would call a roller coaster type operation. But ultimately, you're going to have to end this operation at some point. If your agents have unearthed Isabel's diary, then the climax of the scenario should be performing the ritual. The ritual itself takes an hour to perform, and during that time, the Dark Man will dissuade them from finishing the ritual, but upon completion will vanish. If the agents fail to discover the ritual or Isabel's diary, then there really isn't anything that the agents can do to stop the house. Burning the house down is really just a stall tactic at best. The ritual is not an easy feat, and again, requires the agents to make a human sacrifice to go through it. It is without a doubt a sanity-blasting event, and is what the operation builds up to. This is why I stressed to direct the agents in finding the diary. The ending of the operation hinges entirely on having the book in a way that feels easily avoidable. Banishing the Dark Man from the house rewards the agents with some sanity and mild praise from their Delta Green contact. I mean, no one said being a Delta Green agent was glamorous after all. Alright, so here's what I liked about this operation. I think the intrigue of Isabel and the strange events surrounding her and the house are great. The operation goes above and beyond fleshing out each of the NPC's stories of their experiences in the house. I really like the setup and conflict surrounding the green box. I think green boxes are always fascinating and great ways to pique player interest. The operation restrains itself from having the green box be a dumping ground of mythos artifacts that can quickly derail any investigation. I also liked the consideration taken to how the agents might go about their investigation and ways to deal with it. I know I didn't really talk about it much in this review itself, but there really is a lot of great cursory details that you can sprinkle in your operation that makes it feel much more alive. I think ultimately, though, where this scenario flounders for me is its ending and its reliance on the agents finding the diary inside of the end table. A lot of time is spent detailing the events that are sort of tangentially related, but not really helpful for the agent's investigation. Without the diary, the scenario really does kind of fall apart. The operation even admits that the ending may result in the agents simply giving up on their investigation. While I can understand that cold cases are a part of an agent's time in Delta Green, it doesn't feel very satisfying to have your game end in, well, we give up. I feel the operation also lacks in personal connection back to the agents. Handlers, if you want that sort of thing in your game, you're going to have to do a lot of heavy lifting in that regard. I think speaking of lacking, the operation also lacks a clear timeline of the house's history. There are several times throughout the operation where it'll reference a person's death as a rough time frame for an event taking place, which leads to a lot of unnecessary page flipping. Overall, I think Music for a Darkened Room is an operation with a lot of potential, but it's squandered by its flimsy ending. This could be a pretty good introductory scenario for agents just entering into the program. It's not an operation that you can use to, say, get agents involved with Delta Green, but once they're already involved, this works out, I think, pretty well. Definitely an easy scenario to interject into an already existing campaign. As someone who tends to run Delta Green for new groups, I think this scenario works out pretty well. If you can get the agents to the diary, I think this scenario is going to be a hit for your group. But hey, that's going to do it for this review. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to give us a follow on your platform of choice. For episode show notes and general announcements, be sure to check out our website at www.thegreatoldonesgaming.com. You can also chat with us on Discord, and if you really like the show and you want to support us with your hard-earned money, well, you can do so by heading over to patreon.com/thegreatoldonesgaming. Patrons at any level get early access to episodes, along with first dibs in any games that we run publicly. If you want to check out Music from a Darkened Room, you can do so by picking up a Night at the Operation collection, or as a standalone PDF through DriveThruRPG. Links, as always, are in the show notes. Thank you, as always, for your listening ears, and until next time, handlers, take care out there.